I get to talk to some very interesting people on the show, and I get to talk to people for a lot of different reasons. And the reason my current guest is here is, well, because she's doing something that I've never seen before, and she's doing it in a way that rivals major accessory and jewelry companies all over the world, and nobody can compete with someone like you. So please welcome Ellora Longley to the show. She is the creator, designer, badass all the way up from Alaska. But more importantly, you probably have heard her family's story on Joe Rogan with her father about the Boneyard, but that's not what I'm here to talk about today. I'm here to talk about how you became such an insanely talented artist and such a mind-blowing jeweler at the same time.
Oh my gosh, that is such a beautiful intro. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Honestly, I'm just like happy and excited to be here and be talking to you. I was surprised when you asked me to be on your show because I do not put a lot out there of kind of who I am and my journey. I just put out my art, and that's very cool that I think my art spoke enough for itself that you're like, hey, I want to talk to you. And that is honestly my goal of what I put out there and what I'm making. It's a little bit of me. It's a little bit of my story, growing up in Alaska, and it is just my passion and kind of what gives me fulfillment and gets me through every single day. And it has been such a journey to get to this outlet. So I'm an entrepreneur. My first business that I started was it's a gold panning attraction in Fairbanks. I own it with my sister Jordan. It's called Gold Daughters. And we got together after college. I studied entrepreneurship, if that's a thing you can study. So after college, I was like, hey, want to start a business together? And luckily we were young and we didn't think too hard about it and like talk ourselves out of it. Because if it were me now and her now, I think we could definitely get in each other's heads and in each other's way of like a gold panning business. But what if this happens? And what if that? But we were so young, it was like, let's just go for it. And here we are, 10 seasons in. We have just utilized kind of our passion and what we love and what we did in Fairbanks, Alaska, growing up, prospecting for gold on our family's mining claims. So, what we do there is we bring in pay dirt and teach people the art of gold panning. So, that was just kind of my introduction to getting out of that frame of like going and getting a job. And if you've known my dad's story, he is an entrepreneur. So we grew up kind of looking at him and looking at that different way of living, and just I had always admired it. And so after college, it was like, we can do something like that. Let's give it a go. And so now it's just everything. Once you own your own business and you are on that path, it is hard and it is risky, but it is the juice is so worth the squeeze. So the interesting thing with that business is it's seasonal. So we are like all in 100 days of being on site, open 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. And it was just her and I for 2 summers before we hired anyone. So just that's a lot of pressure of like, you can't get sick. You can't have a personal day. Like you have to be on site. So that like long stretch of work, no weekends, no days off, we get hit in the face with time off because we're a seasonal business. We close in the wintertime. So during that winter, I'm a very motivated and hardworking person, and I have that outlet in the summer where I can just like go all in. But then you're hit with this free time, and it's like, oh my God, what do I do with myself? So jewelry has it's been a long road to get here, but that is now my winter focus. So I kind of have this fun balance of gold panning and running a business and managing that in the summer, and then this total 360 of like, kind of I'm working by myself. Very fine detail work, and jewelry is that outlet. But I need something to do with that free time because I think a lot of people idolize like, oh, you have time off, like that must be great. But you know what? It's actually really hard to sit there and be like, what do I do with my time?
Yeah, I
So,
feel you.
yeah.
Everything you're saying, I resonate with so wholeheartedly. Like, it's painful. It's like I feel it in my bones. It's like the idea of starting these businesses and this entrepreneurial journey. It's like it would have just been easier to go work for someone. Like, let's be honest with ourselves. Like, there is never, when you're an entrepreneur, a true entrepreneur, there is no downtime ever. And when you are a designer and you're producing product by hand, I remember being in that place going, like, I can only create so much And once I hit a certain plateau point, like, how are we going to scale it? What is that going to look like? All of the entrepreneurial journey pain points that people have. But I think for you, which was so attractive to me, was the way you create and the idea of solitude within the creative outlet. And the reason I bring that up is because I work, you know, when I'm building, no one else is building with me. No one else is feeling the design and the effort and the energies that's going into the pieces. And mine are a lot less complex because you're using with raw material. I'm using semi-raw material to complete pieces and then assemble lining at a certain point now. But doing that and being with the metal and being alone, there is something really profound about that that I don't hear anyone talk about, except for a friend of mine who makes my hats, you know, Three Horses, Gage over there. He works and he designs his hats and he makes them on his own. And we've had this conversation about what it means to be alone and to be creating something someone's wearing and feeling on their body and the energy and love that goes into these pieces. And so when you see the jewelry on your website and you see it on your social media and you're doing all of these things, it's so much more than the piece that you're creating. It's the foundation of the knowledge that's been passed down through your family through gold panning. It's the knowledge of how to work a metal. It's the knowledge of how to preserve a rare item from, you know, tens of thousands of years ago. And you're putting history into a wearable piece. And I have this like attraction to jewelry in the fashion industry over anything else. I've never been into, and I don't know about you, but I've never been into like, as I sit here wearing baggy pants and an oversized hoodie, and most people can tell, like, I've never been into that more clothing material side. But when you're talking about jewelry, I don't know if it's just because it's like one of the one things that can stand the test of time. I mean, like, you look at the archaeology departments and you go to Egypt and you see the jewelry that's still there from, you know, these pharaohs wearing it, and you just like, something about that, you feel it, you want to wear it, you want to touch it, you want it on you, you want to know what that energy is that's held there. And it's so profound. And so when you're like, I don't know why you would want to have a deep conversation with me, it's like, because I'm not a person who's like, tell me about your family story. I'm like, tell me about how you attach to the metal and how your energy works and how you put your soul into these pieces, because I have never seen anything even in the realm of similarity to what you're creating and what's going to stand the test of time.
That is definitely what attracted me to this art form. Big jewelry fan, you know, jewelry's expensive. If you can't beat them, join them kind of thing.
I feel I'm like,
I'm going to start making this stuff because I am just obsessed. And growing up in Alaska, I've seen a lot of beautiful native ivory carvings, and I am not an ivory carver. I do not do those intricate designs. I do not do scrimshaw. What I do is kind of self-taught, and I think that's why my pieces are more unique, because I've never had that influence of like, this is how you do it. It's just me sitting with literally something that I found on the ground in Alaska, and I'm bored during the winter time, and I'm like, let's see if I can make this pretty. And that turned into slowly into what it is, definitely with help though, along the way. So I started with just the ivory shards, always been a fan of jewelry. I took some classes growing up in high school. And then after, college, I found like some mentors here and there, but during COVID, my husband and I used to really like to travel during our off season. So I call the off season our winter after Gold Daughters closes. And that's what I would do to just fill that void of time. Like, I could travel the world. I felt like I got a lot out of seeing different places. It's definitely shaped who I am. And that was so important for me to like, just get out and spend the time to do that. I would do it 100 times again, but then all of a sudden traveling wasn't fun anymore. And I was like, I need to figure out something else to do. And I started to come down to Jacksonville. I have family here, and my dad had grown up with this jeweler that's very famous in Jacksonville. His name is Guy Beard. And I was so bored. I'm telling my husband, I need to figure out something to do. Like, I used to coach CrossFit. I love coaching CrossFit, but I was just kind of getting into this. I need more. Like, I need something to fill my time. I need something that I love. And we had so many discussions about like what that is. And so I did photography. I just played with like filmmaking. I was making films for people. I love that too. Gold Daughters has a YouTube channel. Those are all self-produced. So I film everything, I edit everything. And then I was like, you know what? Like, I love jewelry. And my dad has this friend. Maybe he can teach me something because I had never had that like fine jewelry aspect. So I called him up out of the blue and I'm like, hey, you know, John, that guy you went to high school with, I'm his daughter. Like, how random is that? I'm his daughter, but is there anything you need help with? I will trade you my time. I'm really good at social media, at marketing. I can clean your shop. I can do, is there any projects you have? And I'll trade you my help and you teach me some jewelry stuff that I want to learn. And it just so happened he was doing like mass production stuff, and all of those factories he was working with were closed. Like, so his whole business changed. He was doing wholesaling, factories closed. He needs to get back into the retail market. And so he didn't have a storefront. And he's like, actually, yeah, I need help getting rid of all of this clutter in my shop and building a storefront. So I was there every morning at 9 a.m. And he's like, what is this girl doing? She just shows up and she just cleans
I
like
love
my space and
it.
random boxes. I'm going through files like, you need this, you need this. I totally Marie Kondo'd like their whole
I
space.
love the hell out of that.
Oh my God, it was just fun and I was obsessed with it. And then every so often he's like, okay, what do you want to learn? I'm like, let's build a ring. Let's build a gold cap. Let's cast gold. Let's set stones. Let's solder. So he just taught me like very specific skills that I was interested in, just in exchange for me helping him. So it was this really beautiful, like symbiotic relationship where it just worked out with his timing of he needed this too. Like he needed help. And I needed help. So I just kind of showed up. Talk about like right place at the right time. But
Timing's everything.
yeah, I think
Everything.
that no matter what, if you follow your passions, things like that happen. Just keep following like that intuition of like, what do I feel I want to do? And that's where all of my businesses come from. It's like, what am I interested in? Because if you're not interested in it, you can't make a business off of it, right? You can't make a
No.
living at it if you don't like to do it. So mine has always been, what do I like? And I've
Right.
tried everything, painting, photography, like I said, videography, but nothing kind of felt natural to me until I got into this jewelry making. And I was like, finally, I have like some natural ability here where I can like see things and go off of my instinct with like painting and drawing and photography is very, it was hard for me. And I never had just that eye, but jewelry is like, I get this. And it was cool. I had my grandma was visiting for a month this winter, and my grandfather, who I didn't get to spend much time with, he passed away when I was like 5. She was like, man, your grandfather would be so proud. And I was like, oh my gosh, he was a sculptor and he worked with metal and he made these beautiful, big sculptures. And he just worked with all local, forms that he could find in Fairbanks. He'd work with like clay and stuff that he found. And so I didn't know that, but she told me that when she was visiting, and I'm like, oh my God, is maybe that's where I'm, you know, naturally got this
Right.
stuff from.
Yeah, it
Yeah,
flows.
it does flow. So that was just, I think it all kind of tied in. And then, of course, I use my photography skills now for photographing
Yeah,
jewelry.
you do. And they're
So
good.
it all kind of like continuing to pursue that, whatever it is, that like compulsion of like, I need to do something. In those years of not knowing what that is and kind of feeling like I'm spinning my wheels in the winter and just like, I don't know, let's travel. It all kind of has come to a head here where I'm like, this is my purpose. And it's funny because it's such a silly thing when you think about like something that fulfills you. I'm sitting in a shed, like spindling a broken piece of mammoth tusk, but it makes me so happy. So I'm like, I'm meant to do this. I don't know why, but this feels good to me.
And that's what's really beautiful is you've followed what feels good to you, not what you think you should be doing. And I see that so often with a lot of clients and people who are like, I'm not happy in my life, I'm not happy in my job, I'm not happy in what I do, you know, and it's just making me miserable and spin out. And it's like, well, if you could lead with your heart, And in the truest sense, and this is where people are like, well, Kelsey, that's not reality. I have to pay bills and I have kids and I have a mortgage and I have a, like, fuck, we all do. Okay. Back up. We all do. So you can find the things that work for you. And if more often than not, if you find the things that you're passionate about, that you love, that where your heart really resonates from, it will find a way to work, because it's that, you know, that idea. What are the, you know, the last 5 minutes before you fall asleep, well, that's going to be the subconscious you spend the next 7 or 8 hours in. And so if you can talk and convince the subconscious that this is where your passion and your heart lies, you're going to wake up with that drive to continually push out into that space. And it will inevitably start to work, because you will be of the mindset that I'll figure it out. Doesn't matter what it'll take. I'm going to get there. I'm going to get it done, because that's my passion and that's my drive. And I know I felt the exact same way when I started on the, like, working on the kitchen table. Like, I didn't know why, didn't know what the reason was, but I felt like this was it. The hard part is when that starts to shift. And so for me, that has started to make the shift into other spaces and out of maybe more of the physically creative and more of the energetically creative. And so that has been an interesting shift. But for you, where you're at with your pieces, it does feel like there's a... Forgive me if I'm over assuming, but it feels like there's a spiritual, emotional connection to your pieces based on the materials you're using. So can you break that down a little bit for me?
Absolutely. Yeah. Every piece that I make is a part of, like, my spirit and whatever it is that is, you know, I call it my muse. And I've actually heard artists, like, talk about this when you're in flow, right? So many times I'm not feeling like I'm doing it. You know, it's just, it's done. And I'm like, oh my God, I made that. But it's, when you think about really what goes into my pieces, it kind of breaks my brain a little bit, because it's all just, it's happened, right? It's all been laid out in front of me. I'm just the one here doing it. I think I even posted today, like, a lot of people always ask for blue mammoth ivory. I'm like, yeah, let me make that, you know, let me whip that up. But it is rare and it is out there, but I find it, like, I don't know what color a piece is going to be until I start cutting into it. I don't know if you're familiar with opals or anything, but you don't know what you're going to get until you start removing what else is around it and trying to find the most beautiful spot. And that's all I do. And it takes a lot of time and just whatever's there is there. I'm just the one that happens to be showcasing it. But with mammoth ivory and with our story of this discovery, and I don't know if I should touch on this discovery, because maybe people have not heard about what we're doing. Where I'm sourcing this all from, it's, we call it the Boneyard. My dad has been on Joan Rogan twice now, talking in length about the site. So if you're interested in the actual site, that's what you got to listen to kind of understand the full depth of what we're doing out there. But in all, it's a site, it's a mining claim where 15 years ago, we stumbled upon a mammoth tusk. But what really kind of sparked our interest, we found mammoth tusks and other mining claims, but this one smelled so bad. And that smell is what was, like, was different. And my dad, I will give him so much credit, because not enough people, probably. I don't think there's anyone else in the world that would have spent the time, energy, and money that he did to actually see what was there. We found the first mammoth tusk. He thought, you know what? The smell is weird. This tusk is beautiful. It's in, like, pristine, like, it had just come out of the ice, right? Like, it was just in beautiful condition. He's like, maybe there are more here. So he set up a hydraulic monitor, started washing away some of the muck that was around it. And we have this recycle pond. So all the silt and backwater gets washed back to the pond. We can use it all again. And that second day looking, we found another mammoth tusk, but we also found about 100 more bones.
I'm like an archaeologist. Like, this is like a wet dream. This is like, oh my God. Oh,
when they go, like, out,
you touch it. Like, you just, can we just take for 2 seconds that your dad was the first person to pick up a mammoth tusk that had been frozen in the ice? Like, do you, you know that feel? You know, you can see it. It's like the first person to touch the thing. It's like the first person to open up a shaft from an Egyptian sarcophagus. Like, that's so intense.
It's intense. And it's funny because I was like 14 years old at the time that we discovered this.
Did you
So
like, could you wrap your brain around it? Can you
no, I
still?
thought it was so normal. I was like, oh,
Of
cool.
course you did. A mammoth test. We own that. It's fine.
Yeah, I was like, oh, cool, Dad. Great. And he's like, let's look some more. So he would literally just drop us off out there, like me and my sister. The only people that have worked this site are my siblings and my parents. I have four siblings, three sisters, one brother. I have my aunt came up and worked for a couple summers. My cousin Beau worked up there a couple summers. My husband is now up there. My sister's husband has worked there. So the only people that have worked this site are family and very close friends. So we have a world-renowned site. We've had scientists and paleontologists from all over the world now come to this site. So from 15 years ago, finding that first tusk, finding 100 bones, 100 more the next day, 100 more the next day, 100 more the next day. For probably 10 years of it, people just thought we were nuts. Like my friend's parents growing up were like, what's your dad making you go do? And I'm like, I don't
Making
know. If
you
I'm,
go do.
yeah, we're collecting bones. They go, what are you going to do with them? And we're like, we don't know. We're just kind of
We're
that
just,
muse thing. Like
but
maybe that
we're.
was just my dad's, I don't know why, just go do it. Like, why not?
Well,
Why wouldn't we?
the other thing too is this is so much bigger than finding bones. This is changing the trajectory of human existence and where we thought animals were and where we thought they got to, and the land bridge and the mass extinction events. Like, this is so. Hey there, humans. I know you guys have seen it brown on the top of my head. Well, that is from Three Horses Hat Co., and they are 100% beaver felt hats. That's the highest quality hat you can get, and each one is handmade in Nashville, Tennessee. Three Horses does both custom and one-off hats. They've never made the same hat twice. So if you design your own, they'll never make it again. If you feel like you can't find a hat that fits your style, that's all right. Go check out Three Horses Hat Co. Use the code BRASS, get 15% off. Embrace the fever, live the dream. Much bigger than finding bones. We're talking
It's
about
huge.
something. This is gonna, well, if the archaeologists will get their heads out of their asses and stop being so fearful of their books being rewritten and then their careers being changed, like this is going to change the trajectory. This little plot, this tiny piece of land, something
Tiny.
like so massive, game changing happened there that for some reason people just want to overlook. It's not just
It's
bones.
I know it is definitely more than that, but we have to keep in mind 15 years ago when we discovered it, we didn't know that.
Right.
Nobody knew that, right? So we know that now, but at the time and for a decade, we had scientists coming out there, but it wasn't, my dad wasn't on Joe Rogan. We weren't posting anything online. We weren't putting anything on YouTube. We were a couple of kooky Alaskans
I love
doing
it.
something weird.
We're playing with
And
bones.
we just kept doing it and we didn't know why, but we didn't know why not is the bigger thing. Why wouldn't we? And that is, I think that that alone would really surprise people, the amount of work and time and sacrifice that all of us, our whole family has put into this site and put made it into what it is. Because it's not like a massive gold nugget that you stumble on one time and you found a massive nugget and there's this site now. We found one tusk, but it took work to find the second tusk. It took work to find 100 more bones. And it was constant, just a constant search. And it was not like we're only looking for tusks and we're selling them on the black market, like, or the legal market, not the black market, but it wasn't for the money ever. So for us to go out there as kids, teenagers into adulthood, and we are picking up tusks, but we're also picking up little tiny fragments. My favorite find ever is probably one that my mom found. It was a tiny little ground squirrel jawbone, like so small, tinier than a pinky nail, with the teeth still in it. Like we are out there,
What?
we're picking up everything, and there's a little bit of an eye for it. Like you really gotta know what you're looking for, and it takes that practice, and it just takes the time of being there. And so I have to give my dad credit on seeing that for we didn't know what it was, but he saw something there that was big, that is what it is now. But he had the sight and the curiosity and the time and the energy. And, you know, he's been offered hundreds of thousands of dollars for bones. And he's like, I'm not selling any of it. I'm keeping it all in a collection. It's going to stay until I can figure out what we're going to do with it.
Well,
And
also,
that's the big unknown.
What happened? Because all of these bones, and I love that mystery side of it, because it is so prolific when you look at some of the photos that your dad has been posting and that you guys post, and it's like, these are all charred bones from a fire that apparently never existed in a place that it never happened, with short-faced bears and strange animals that aren't supposed to be where they are in a massive event where a ton of them are in one tiny spot. Like, something so different is there. And it seems like it took, you know, I'm a big believer in, like you said, the right time, the right place, but I believe we each have these journeys on the face of the earth for the time that we're here. And for whatever reason, it took a kooky, if you will, different type of dad and family to like put energy into this and say, no, we're not going to sell this off, or no, we're not going to start giving it to museums. We need to know, we need to understand why this is happening. Furthermore, we can change the course of human history by just being patient. Most people would have run to the money with that, especially with the amount of tusks you guys have and the backstory of where a lot of them are floating in rivers and being stolen and like wild shit. So how do you go from, okay, this is just what we do as a family. I mean, you're in Alaska, so it's a strange space anyway. So it's like, what do we do as a family? We dig up bones and we have all of these amazing archaeological finds. How did you go, I want to start taking the ivory and the pieces and this living history, because it is, I mean, your dad has stated like he knows what these animals taste like.
Yeah.
So that's cute. I'm concerned for his health regularly.
Always.
But how do you go, like, we're going to turn these into wearable pieces? And energetically, again, this is more the woo side of me. When you're working with these animals, because these are parts of these living creatures that used to graze this earth well before us, which just, oh my God, that just like, oh, I love it so much. How does that feel for you? Because I feel like you're really in tune with that stuff.
Yeah, it's very humbling. And I will say mammoth tusks and ivory, that has probably been one of the first forms of art or of a medium that humans carved with to make art, right? Like, that has been around for a long time. These tusks have been here for all of humankind, right? So they're already very ancient artifacts that have been carved from ivory, especially in Alaska. Native Alaskans carved sunglasses with them, you know, to block the snow glare.
I've seen them. It's
an amazing material to work with. So for us, it was just, you kind of get to a point where you have so many broken pieces that aren't museum quality that you can't do anything with. So it's like, well, you know, let's craft something. Let's see what I can make with it. It's just sitting there otherwise. Right. And it's not, we never cut into a big woolly mammoth tusk or even a piece that's complete. And most of the pieces, like I said, we don't sell anything. The only thing that we really sell are these broken shards that have no museum quality or information that you can study from them. So it's just, they're there. And we like making it, we like working with it. And I say it's humbling because exactly, these animals were living, they were alive, right? So I like to say, when I send my pieces out, they're being brought back to life. They're walking the earth again. They're roaming the earth this first, a second time with you. And I wear, you know, my ring every day, and it's humbling working with it because you're so reminded of this fact that extinction events are real. These animals lived here. Where did they go? And I'm faced with that reality every single time I sit down at my bench and get to work. And I'm always like, man, I hope someone makes jewelry with my bones.
Right?
Probably not.
They don't love that anymore.
Yeah, I think people get so into what they're doing, where this kind of, you said, woo-woo stuff, they don't think about it, right? Like, you're never faced with, we don't think about the extinction events all the time. And when you do, you're probably like, ah, I don't want to think about that.
Yeah.
That makes me not feel good. And I can't go to sleep now. So being faced with that every day and working in it and just being reminded of our vulnerability as a species and that these events can happen, you just, it makes me, it's not a dark thing. It's a very happy thing. It's like, you know what? I have this little blip of time. You better find what you love to do and do it every single day. And that's what I get out of jewelry. I love it. I want to do it every day. And I feel so grateful that I found this where it's something I am obsessed with. It is the last thing I think about before I go to bed. And it feels like I've found my purpose, right? And it's something so, so small, but it's what I get to enjoy. And I think that's really important when it comes to just living your life. You got to find, you keep looking. If you're not happy and you're in this cycle of like, you haven't found what you love, you just keep trying because you never know what's going to work out. You know, I could have just never found this and that would have been sad. I would have never known, but it was just that constant. I was faced and I'm grateful for it, but every winter you're faced with time right in my face. So what do I do? You know, and it's kind of like these little mini retirements. People, when they retire from a long career, they're hit in the face with that time. And they're like, what do I do? And a lot of times people don't know what to do. And it's not a good feeling because it's like, they feel like they've worked their whole life and then they finally have time. They don't know what to do. It's really hard. In our culture, in our society, it's made you feel like you always have to work. Like work is the center. And that used to really bother me when I would meet people and it's, oh, what do you do? It's like, why is that the first thing we always ask? You know, like, what do you do for work? That's so, so American. And so this is just turned into something that I love to do. And it so happens that I can also do it for work. And that wouldn't have happened if I didn't keep trying to find that thing, you know, that thing that I could pour myself into and feel really good about.
Do you feel, because I've seen that, I love that you touch on this because there's so much more depth to what you do than I think people want to look deeper into. It's a beautiful, shiny thing and they kind of go on. But when you're talking about creating and brought to you by Mindful Meds, you guys have been seeing me take Mindful Meds for a little while now. Mindful Meds is a premium supplement company dedicated to supplying humans with the tools to improve their mental health, clarity, and performance, all while supporting their growth along the way. Whether it's the Immunity Blend, Lion's Mane, Inspire, or Voyage, all of their products are clean, tested, consistent, and they've become a huge help in my life. I found Mindful Meds over a year ago now, and I've never looked back. Go check out their website, mindfulmeds.io, and use the code BRASS at checkout.
A piece of you that's walking around, like I say that about our stuff. It's like a piece of my heart is walking around on all of these people. And they just think it's like an object they put on throughout the day. And it just looks cute. It's like, well, if you think about where your things come from and the energy that's put into them, it's drastically different because whatever you're wearing, whatever you're doing with it, that's that person's purpose. So when you're saying like, you know, we work our whole lives, we then retire and then we're faced with the stark reality. Well, we see that in the veteran, the first responder space a lot, right? It's like the second you lose a purpose, the second you lose a purpose, that is when mental health issues start to creep in. And maybe things that were sitting dormant, maybe things that just had happened. But you can use tools. And I call jewelry making and art therapy a tool because I think it's a massive one in our toolbox that we could provide to people, children and otherwise, ways to have an outlet and create purpose. And when you have a purpose in your life, everything else starts to fade away and becomes okay. I can handle it all because I have my purpose. I know what that looks like and I'm driving toward it. So when you speak about purpose, I love hearing that because it's so rare, excuse me, that others speak about jewelry and purpose in the same sentence, excuse me, and how that's brought purpose to not only you, but those around you and what that looks like for not only your business, but like sustainability and how you want to live your life and how that'll impact because you're happy, because you're driving towards a purpose. Others around you are going to feel the positivity that you radiate from that instead of just, what do you do for a living? What kind of, how do you make money? How do you make a way to like eat? And I've never heard somebody say that, you know, I hate that you ask, like, what do you do for a living? But I guess if you're around a lot of different tourists all the time, like they're, that's a normal question. So if I were to meet you, then what would you normally say instead of what do you do for a living?
You know, I don't know. I just know that that's always the first thing, right? Like, why do we do that? you know, but I'm not going to be like, hey, what's up? What's your favorite book? But there are,
why not?
There's more important things, you know, like what I do, it's definitely part of me, but it's not me as a whole. Right. So it's just, we are just so in that mindset. And I think it was more so with Gold Daughters and having my off season, because a lot of people look at that as like, well, what are you doing with your time before, say before I found jewelry and I'm traveling and I'm coaching CrossFit and I'm doing like various things, but to people, if I'm just traveling and you meet someone, they're like, so you only work in the summer? Like, what else do you do? Are you going to school? And because I'm a young woman, there's always that too, of like, they kind of think, and it's gold panning and there's just all these stereotypes of like, I don't know, it being corny and not a legit business. And it's, people couldn't believe that that's what I did. So it's not even something I would offer up. Like, I own a summer gold panning attraction. This is going to be a story to tell,
yeah,
you know?
So
it's just, work doesn't define people. But if you do find an art form and that's your work, I mean, it definitely can define like who you are. But it's just very American for us to always feel like we have to be working, you know? So I'll be playing in my studio making something, but it doesn't feel like work.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. It's your passion. That's why
it's my passion. And so when those two things coincide, that's when good things happen. And that's when it can become your work and it can be seamless and you can make a living at it. And then you can do what you love.
Is that
for
your
a living.
Father in the back creeping on?
Yes.
Who is that?
That's Big Daddy Boneyard.
I know he's shirt. Been, I know he's been like, I can't wait for that interview. And I'm like, I know. I'm like, don't worry. So I'm not asking you to talk. Don't worry. I don't care about you. I care about your daughter. She's a bad bitch. No, yep. I care about your daughter. I am so fascinated about how you create and your design process. So like, walk me through a little bit of that, because like, very much like the muse, how you spoke about like, this is the muse for me. I have experienced a similar thing, but I have a hard time articulating it. So like, tell me how, when you sit down, how do you,
oh my God.
Him and I were having a chat like a week ago about some shit. And I'm just like, I can't, he just riles me up. It's too much.
He's so funny.
He's so funny. Sorry, I digress. Well, when you have people creeping behind you and I can't not see that. So that's
on
me. You
have to address that. That's
I know. I'm
too
so
much.
Sorry. I'm so sorry. So talk to me about how you invite the muse in and what that is like for you. Do you have a ritual, a routine, a behavior that you do that really just opens it up?
I don't really have a ritual or anything, but for me, it's just kind of sitting in my studio and being there in the moment. And really this started as like, so with free time and stuff, I can spend way too much time on my phone. Like that is just, I think everyone probably can at this point. We can all admit it. And I was like, I have to find something where this phone is far away from me for hours at a time. And that's it. So if the more I'm off my phone and not around it, the happier I am. And so I'll just sit in my studio with a shard of broken mammoth ivory, just looking at it. Until I get the courage to cut into it or sand into it. And from there, it's just really seamless. It just takes its own life. And that's what I'm just present for it. And I'm just there to try this and just not being afraid to mess up. And I think that's the really beautiful thing with jewelry and why I've really taken to it as an art form. My mentor here in Jacksonville, Guy Beard, I really learned that from him. Jewelry is a fine art that will withstand the test of time, and it is going to be around for forever. And it is the constant search to make it perfect. That's what I learned from him, is that he will have a ring he's working on where he sees something in the laser welder with this micro vision that you would never see with the naked eye. And he will spend 10 hours making that flawless. And I'm like, but the customer will never see that. Like, they won't know that it's a little, you know, there's a little porosity here, or whatever, but it's that constant search for perfection. That's what jewelry is all about. And that's what I really admire about it. Cause I'm the kind of person that can kind of rush through things. And so this forces me to get out of that comfort zone. And that's what I love to do, because I think that's where your growth happens. And that has forced me to go slow, and constantly seek that perfection with jewelry and with my pieces and in design. So there's no thing about jewelry that you can rush, and there's no scaling up for what I do. And I've posted about this before. I've had people from China or Russia reach out. Hey, we sell ivory. We're mammoth carvers for hundreds of years. Yeah, I'm sure you guys do it a lot more efficient than I do, but I would never, there is too much at stake for that when it comes to ivory, mammoth ivory. This is stuff that I have found. No mammoths were harmed in the creation of my jewelry. It's pretty much like I'm out there picking up a stick or a rock, but this animal was alive. There's no question on where my materials come from. And that is really important to me. So it's something that, yeah, it's a business I probably can never scale, because what I get out of it is what I put into it. And I can't teach that. I can't, I can't, and I wouldn't want to let that get away from me, because that's what I love about it. Yeah. So it's, as an art form, that's just, my process is just being present is really important, and not letting like other influences of what's out there kind of dictate what I'm doing, you know, and just keep following and pursuing what I like to make, because there's, yeah, maybe styles or stuff that people want to see that might be more popular, but it's like, I'm not trying to make the most popular and scalable thing. I'm just trying to make what I like to do. And that's with any designer or artist. I think that's what's really important and gets them out of bed is the passion projects. They don't want to feel like they're just kind of going through the motion, because that's not why you got into art, to make the same thing, you know, over and over and over. So that's, for me, at where I'm at right now, that's really important, is making pieces that I love, and continuing to play around with it and do different designs. And if there's different things I want to try, you know, incorporating gold nuggets, that was a skill, you know, that was different than carving or shaping the ivory. So learning to solder and working gold into my pieces, that's also really important. But it feels bigger than me just because of the material that I'm using. Mammoth ivory, it humbles you real quick. And when you touch it, you know, different crystals, maybe this is woo-woo, but different crystals have different properties and stuff. And
you're talking it is, to me.
It is real. And woolly mammoth, it's a very grounding and healing property. So it's supposed to be good for healing traumatic experiences. And I think that that's a really beautiful thing. And I just know how important my pieces are to people when they do get them. So it is just that constant search of like, we're doing it, we're doing it right. And I'm just so grateful every single day that I get to do what I do.
So if you can't scale, which I think you could, I'm sure there's parts, ways, and things you could be manipulated for sure, but it's not about can, it's more about want. And so how does that work for you in terms of, you know, as you're popularity grows and people start to really take notice into what you're creating, how do you foresee that, I mean, expanding from an awareness perspective? Do you ever see selling in retail to retail? Do you ever just think you're going to sell direct? Like, how does that work for you?
Great question. And I don't know. And that's okay for me to not know. I got into this because I love it. And I put things for sale every couple of weeks or every month on, I call it a drop. And if those pieces go, if not, if they're still up and at the end of the year, I have extra pieces, those are probably the pieces I can sell in my own gift shop in Alaska, or maybe I build enough inventory to sell to different retailers. But I don't know what that would look like. And all I know is the experience from my other business, Gold Daughters. You don't always have to know. Just keep going. And someday you might figure it out and maybe you won't, but just as long as I'm still making pieces and loving what I do, that's what's really important to me.
I like that.
And if I can figure it out, I figure it out.
Yeah, well, it's this idea that if you keep going and if it's right for you, it's what you're supposed to be doing. It's going to eventually show up in the way that it should show up, whatever that looks like.
Yeah. Yeah, I think patience is really important when it comes to business. And I learned this over and over with Gold Daughters. I own that with my sister. And the wonderful thing about our partnership is we are the same person, but we're also totally opposite. So we have things that we naturally do in our business that are roles that we've just taken on. She's a very logistic person. I'm more of like creative and marketing. And that just is such a beautiful balance. And we don't always know what we're going to do, but we're in it together. And so we have a lot of back and forth for anything that we add to our business or any long-term decision. We're just, we've learned not to be quick to pull the trigger on something, because in business, once you do, it's hard to go back. You really can't. So you better be certain when you do it, that that's a good idea moving forward. So we've spent, you know, a lot of time. We'll have a debate on something and I'll have my way and she'll have her way. And we go back and forth for weeks, months, years, who knows how long. But then you have to have that unanimous, okay, this is a good idea to move forward. Mm-hmm. Owning your own business, you don't have that back and forth. So it's really good to play devil's advocate for yourself too. And just don't rush into making any long-term decisions, because at the end of the day, this is more of like a gold mining term, but the gold's still in the ground. It's not mm-hmm. going anywhere. You don't have to rush into it. You don't have to know everything. And I would say that for anyone who's thinking of starting a business too, I touched on being young when we started Gold Daughters, that naivety was definitely in our favor. It was just like, I don't know, let's try it. Let's give it a year. Like who cares? If it fails, it fails. But if not, we'll have fun. If it makes money, great. We'll do it again. And just having that more of like a, it'll be okay if it fails, having that mindset, that's so encouraging. And I think as an entrepreneur, you just have to remember it's okay. Like it's okay if it fails. And you can put something out there and then be like, you know what? I don't like it. And scratch that, try again. There's no rules, right? That you have to be pot committed on anything. And this could be even going to school. Like if you went to school and you majored in this and then you did this, but then you hate it. Don't do stuff you hate. That is something I get out of making this jewelry, is these mammoths had such a short time on the earth. They didn't know what was going to happen to them. And now they're gone. Like, I hope they enjoyed their life while they're here. And that's the humbling aspect that makes me go through life going, what do I like to do? You know, and that's gotta be at the front for everybody, career, like corporate minded person or in creative outlets. Whatever you're doing, you got to find that thing that you love. That's you only get one chance to go around Earth, unless someone makes your bones into jewelry. You can go to secondhand. But you just got to keep trying to find that thing that you get excited about, and that you, it's the last thing you think about before you go to bed, and you're all about it when you wake up. And don't be afraid to fail at it. If it fails, that's okay. But whatever it is for you, there is space for it, and it is important, and you'll never know if you don't keep looking for that thing.
I love how passionate you are when you talk about failure. Let me tell you why. So many people, and I made this mistake when I started my company, so many people wrap their identity around what it is that they're doing, and it meshes into them. It is no longer a part of them or what they do. It is them. And when you have that, there is this idea that if it fails, you fail. And so when you are talking about being devoid of that and removing yourself from it and just seeing it for what it is, a thing that you happen to be doing, it's not you, it's not all of you. If it fails, it's not you. You know, if you enjoy it, it's not you. If you love it, it's not you. If it makes you money, it's still not you. It's a thing that you do. And the passion around that, I believe, is so important, because so many people nowadays, we see this time and time again. I mean, you're fairly young. You're in your 20s, I'm guessing.
Oh, thank you.
How old are you? I'm 31. Okay, so we're not far off each other, because you're in your early 30s. But you see that with, I would say, kind of our age group people and younger. This idea where they marry to the idea, they marry to the political belief, they marry to the subset of thought, they marry to the way they move about their life. And at any point when that's shook, they're not able to handle it, because their entire identity is wrapped in what it is to be that thing, right? Person, job. So I love that at the beginning you're like, why do we ask people what do they do? Why don't we just, like, I don't know, a better question would be, what makes you happy every day? People would be I'll bet you they wouldn't know how to answer that.
I totally agree. I think that it's it's just, there's more to life than that, than what we do, and getting confounded in those boxes. But I think the sense of like identity, and maybe it comes down to like all of the BS politics and like identity politics and all of that. We get so emotional about it where it's like, that is us. Okay, well, if you're in that camp, then you have to think this, this, and this is. It's like, so groupthink. Like, do you, what about all these other thoughts? Like, you don't have to get married to that. And I think there's this sense of like, when you have an idea or you have something you want to say, and so you put it on social media, but then maybe in like 5 years, you're not feeling that way anymore, but you've already said it on social media. So then you kind of feel like, but I'm accountable to that. Is that who I am? You don't know. You have these like things that you've put out there, but it leaves no room for like questioning that, you know, does it, what comes first? Are you questioning if you do change your mind, like, can you go back on it? Or is that you're so engrossed in that because that's how you've been, but can you change your mind? I don't know. I think once you put things out there and they're kind of there and people think that's that way that you are, you stay there, but would you stay there if you didn't put all of that out there? You know, would you be more open to other ideas if you didn't have this like subset of who you've been? You know, there's like got to be this kind of back and forth of like your expectations for how people think you are. So then you have to be that way. But what if you kind of are this way on that and you kind of want to change, but you can't because you're already over here.
Right.
You know, there's just a lot of like this identity of who we are. We have to be that way, but like, there's no growth there. There's no growth in always being the same person. Like, people change, you know, every single day. There's ups and downs. The tide goes in and it goes out. Like, there's always something that you can change, and you should be open to change always. You should always be questioning. But once you're put in that box in America and they think they have you in your vote, like, you're kind of being told how to think. And if you're already bought in, like, you're just going to agree. It's so insane that we do that. It leaves no room for actually thinking about how you feel about something because you're told how to feel about it.
Well, they don't want you to think. That's the thing you got to remember, is they don't want to give you room to think, and they don't want you to think, because if you were given the opportunities and the actual wherewithal, the space to think and grow and change and develop a new way of life or a new way to do things or a new thought process on a particular topic or political ideology, if they were giving you space to do so, they would realize very quickly that you're not malleable, and that if you can't control what they think, that you cannot control the way they vote. So it's always comes down to a control tactic. But being someone who has traveled the world, being somebody who has had these really cool, extensive experiences that maybe some don't get to access, talk to me about that feeling, because you speak as if you are a very worldly person about topics like this, because in my opinion, this is a North America thing.
Yeah. I mean, Canada is scary. I don't want to have to drive to Canada anymore.
We're totalitarian falling into communism. It's fine. It's fine.
Oh my God.
Fine. But it feels like a North America thing. This married to idea, this married to, this is the career you start with, the one you finish with, but it doesn't feel like that in other places in the world.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I maybe boils down to like our two party system. And I think right now we're just like, we're broken and we're hurting and we're looking for like, for someone to just make it all make sense. But it's like, we're just getting played, you know? And I think when, you know, the reset happened in 2020 and
I love
people,
that.
Maybe it was good. Like, it brought a lot of people, I think, who maybe were stuck in their narrative out of it, to go, what's going on? And it brought some people way deeper in it. And it's really sad that those people are being taken advantage of. And I think to a certain degree, everyone's being taken advantage of, because there's higher powers that are pulling strings that we don't even know are being pulled. I think a lot of it is just the amount of news and the amount of politics that we are obsessed with and that we consume every day. I think this just comes back to like, fill your day with stuff that makes you feel good. What is it for me that doesn't make me feel good? Okay, being on my phone. I want to avoid that. Getting like sucked into social media, watching too much news, consuming too much of that negativity. Like, I have a choice to see what I consume. I can not follow the news, and I can be a lot more present in my day about like things that are in my current scope of dealing with. Like, some things I just feel like they're out of my scope, right? Something goes on that if I can't do anything about it, like if I can't do anything, why am I going to stress about it? Like, I can't do anything about it. So if there's horrible things going on in the world that make me feel sad, what can I do today to make me feel better? Mm. And just finding those things, I think, is really important for mental health, on like when you naturally just kind of go into that feeling of like, I don't feel good. What is this?
Right.
Finding things that you know can kind of take you out of it. And it can be something, just be nice to the people you encounter every day. You know, like, that is something that I can control. Being a nice person, being kind to the people that I see and that I deal with. And there's just so much kind of that you can get sucked into, and you can get so just overwhelmed. It's just, it's too much. It's mm-hmm. too much to even see. That's so out of our control. And I think coming from a small community like Fairbanks, you actually do feel like it's a community still. When you're on the side of the road and your car is broke down, people do pull over and they say, do you need help? I'm spending time here in Jacksonville, Florida in the winter, avoiding the 45 below up there. Sorry, everyone back home. But here you're not getting seen, and you're not getting help from strangers. You're kind of just, everyone's in their own world. And there's different cities where it's, you know, even more so. Florida, it's a big city, Jacksonville. I think it's the largest land city in all of America. And it's just like, you get lost. Like, it's a shock to my system when I come down here from Fairbanks, because it's, you don't say hi to people in the grocery store. I mean, a lot of that has changed the past few years anyways, but that small community, the things that you can control, it feels better in like a town where you go to the grocery store and you like, oh, hey, you know, you see someone, you know, or you're just being nice. You're still being friendly to your neighbors mm-hmm. and like still feeling like you matter to your neighbors. And that community feeling is super important. So if you're like trapped in that overwhelming, like, what's going on in the world, just be nice to your community. Like, helping and being kind, that does help yourself too.
Yeah, acts of service, right? And I think there's something really special about growing up in a small town where you have that that extra layer of protection from the stark realities of the world. And that molds you into a very different person. So when you're speaking about shocks to the system going to large cities, you become really aware of the reality that you're just a person moving in a massive group of humans, where they're, if someone in Florida pulled over to me, I would have a hand on a knife, because I'd be afraid of being kidnapped, because we're pocket size. But if I was in Alaska, I'd be more concerned about a bear eating me and I would get in anybody's car to help me. Then, you know what I mean? Like, you grow up in these environments where there's this understanding and there's this assumption of safety due to small environments. I mean, Colonel Russell Williams, that lives in my, used to live in my town, was a serial killer, we found out. But look, I'm just
saying.
There's
a lot of serial killers in Alaska too, believe it or not.
It's got to be the isolation.
We get, they call them end of the roaders. It's like bad people are just like, I'm going to go to Alaska. And we got a lot of them.
It's because you have all the space.
I know.
To hide.
Yeah. My sister, Lauren, she's a comedy writer. She lives in LA. And she was working on a podcast that she wanted to pitch about serial killers in Alaska, because she did the news when she was 18 years old. She was out like covering and like interviewing this crazy, she was introduced to this world of Alaska that like
the dark underbelly that no one
you wouldn't
sees.
See. Yeah. Maybe there's some shows on it, because Alaska has like every show out there. But yeah, we have a very like dark kind of side to us too, because of the isolation, the dark, the cold. It is a hard place to live, really hard.
Well, can we talk a little bit about that? I want to, because that's such a different place to grow up, and it's got to shape you differently, other than having your father as your father, which is a whole, that's a whole other animal. But like, let's talk about the stark reality of like what it's like to live in an area where it's dark a lot of the time, where it's cold and isolation. Now, post-COVID, we've learned so much about how to break a human being. And it really just comes down to isolation. So how has that been growing up in that environment?
Oh man, my parents did a wonderful job at keeping us busy. So when you're a kid, you don't know any better, right? Mm-hmm. And they had that in their back pocket. We didn't know any better. We were all, you know, we just grew up there. It was normal. So you don't really know those things until you get out. And I went to school in Florida for college, and that was my, like, I knew I wanted to go somewhere warm, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's it. I was like, I just want to warm up.
Heat,
not meant for this. So I went down to South Florida for school, and man, now that I know better, when you go back, it's like, this is hard. This is hard. And it's, you know, hats off to every single person that lives there. And I think that's why that community is so strong, because you go through a winter together where you have, it's just terrible for everyone, and going to the grocery store is hard, and dropping off your kid at school, getting your kid dressed. You know how many layers you need at 40 below?
So like, many layers.
It's so bad. And there's this level of like, what's outside can kill you. Like,
for real though.
No one in Florida goes through that. Like, they're dropping their kids off. They get broke down on the side of the highway. They call AAA. In Alaska, if you break down and you're driving from Fairbanks to Anchorage, the closest city, by the way, which is 365 miles, if you break down at 40 below, you're fucked. You got to have survival gear in your car. You got to know how to survive. And that actually, it sounds hard, but it makes people feel really good. It feels really good to be able
to self-reliance.
Yes. To know that you can take care of yourself when things are bad, you can take care of yourself. And that is why Alaska rocks, because the people that live there, they are all badass just because they live there. They get that, you know, like, you get that.
We ship a ton of product up to Alaska, and I always think about the people I'm sending it to, because I look at the address and go, I've never heard of that. That's so far. That feels so isolated. That feels so different. It's just a completely different lifestyle. But you're not wrong about the animals you have. We have grizzly bears. You have intense levels of violent bears up there. You guys have, you know, wolves. You have everything that will eat you alive and not think twice about it at all. But the environment itself, in terms of things like seasonal affective disorder and like the depression levels and the suicide rates, are so high up north. We see it in the Yukon. We see it in Northwest Territories. We see it in Alaska. Alcoholism, abuse levels, things like that are a real reality people kind of wash over when they're talking about how beautiful Alaska is and how wonderful it is and all these places. But there is a, like you said, a dark underbelly to it. So when I look at where you came from and I look at how you've kind of got to where you are, it makes perfect sense that art therapy became, you know, a saving grace in your life in so many different ways. So if you were to give anybody pieces of advice on how to start, where to begin, what that looks like, whether it's painting, whether it's creating jewelry, whether it's just doing something that you love, how would you recommend people start? Because you seem to start no problem over here. You're a self-starter.
Yeah, I think that's just the thing. If you don't know how to do it, just start on it. You know, like, you can have, I'm a big checklist and like idea person too. And I have all these ideas, but ideas are nothing until you act on it. So it's just literally the action, and it can change a million times before you actually get started on whatever it is, but you just need the action, right? Like, to actually go out and do it. I think that's just, nothing can happen if you're stagnant and you're overthinking something. Just don't think, just go do it.
Seems so, it feels simple, right? When you say
it's because it is, you know, we can get really paralyzed by our own selves, right? And like, in our own way. And what if this doesn't work, or I don't think of this, or I don't have the right permit, or I don't know this, I didn't apply for that. Just go, just do it. And you will figure out everything as you go along.
I think it's a really beautiful message. I think it's something that I wish more people could embody. The fear, everything that we want in this life is standing right behind that four-letter word. It is, all of it is right there. But for some reason, it is just, the fear alone will cripple people into oblivion.
Yeah.
And they will never create what they were supposed to create and be here for what they're here for. We've done such a good job of just distracting people and telling them that they can't.
Right.
And they can. And you're a really incredible example of what that looks like. And the growth points within that. I mean, your jewelry itself, as I've watched you kind of expand into new designs and kind of test things out, like, what do you guys think of this? What about this? All the way down to the new little gold flower you were making and all of those, like the change and the growth has been really wonderful to watch. But moreover, you are some people, I hope that they take this episode and they listen to the story and really see that it doesn't matter where you come from. It doesn't matter what's accessible. You can show up and you can learn if you're willing to give to others, right? It's this idea of approaching the world with an open hand rather than a closed fist. What can I do for you? How can I help you? Acts of service, they always not only make you feel better, but they make those around you feel better. And when you feel good, you radiate a different light.
Right. Absolutely. And I think just that like constant search to just feel good too, right? Like just whatever it is, like if there's something that you're in a rut, but you did that one thing that made you feel better, maybe it was like you went out on a walk or you cleaned your house, like whatever it is, if you can find those little things that kind of lift you up a little bit, just keep doing those little things. And then they do turn into big things. So I had no idea that this is what I was going to be doing, but I just kept chipping away at like, what do I like? What do I like? And I was pretty relentless with that. And it was, you know, it's still not done. Like this, I talk about it, like, this is what I do. Who knows? It could change, but I am open to it. And I think when you take the fear of failure away and you just do what you love, there's so much good that can happen. And a big lesson was opening our gold panning attraction. That is, we did not reinvent the wheel with that. Gold panning has been a time like that has been around for hundreds of years. but what my sister and I offered that was different was we loved it. So if there's something as silly as gold panning, but you love it and you can turn that into something that's important for other people. And what we do, we feel it's important because we're on a day of someone's dream trip to Alaska. They are having the time of their life. They will never forget that trip. They will talk about it for 10, 20, 30 years, that one time in Alaska. And so having the gratitude of like being part of that day, that's what it's all about. And meeting all the people that we get to meet, it's not about the gold that we're finding, but it's in the quest for what we're doing and trying to offer just the best product that we can, be the best people that we can, and have the best team and be a fun place to work. And we have just an amazing staff. And I think just that positivity that you can offer on something that's so mundane, but I really find joy in the simple things in life because you got to, right? Like you can go through and just think of all this heavy stuff going around all day. But with Gold Daughters, it's let's strip it back. What are we doing? We're playing in the dirt. And that is fun. And people really resonate with that. They really resonate with making discoveries. We find fossils at our site. And it's just like the joy in that little stuff, your kid playing outside and getting totally drenched in mud and water and just like being present in that moment. No one can be on their phones when they're gold panning. That's a really awesome thing to see people that are just really stripped down into like, we're playing in the dirt and we're having so much fun. It's so beautiful to see. And the lesson from that is just, there's a lot of beauty in the mundane, in the silly, in whatever it is. And just taking like the little things like that and just having fun.
Well, we're so divorced of our nature. We're so divorced of our land. We're so divorced of this idea of getting dirty and being outside and not sitting on a screen and not being in front of a camera and not, we're so divorced of this idea of the connection to ourselves and what it means to be outside. And outside on its own without anything else can heal.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's huge. And one of our things that we always say is go play outside, like whatever it is, you can feel better if you just get outside, just 10 minutes, whatever you can. If that's something that feels, you know, you don't want to do it, just do it. Just feels good. You know, you'll feel better after. There's a lot of stuff. I don't know why we're like programmed like that as humans to not do the things that make us feel good. And I have to call you out because I was listening to one of your podcasts. You had a health person on and you guys were talking about, why don't people drink water? Like I'm one of those people that does not drink water. And I was sitting there dehydrated and I'm like, oh my God, they're calling me out. I need to go.
You need to drink your fucking water, Laura. Why?
That's what he said. And I was like, oh my God, they're speaking to me. So it's funny.
Right to your soul.
Yeah, you can. It hit hard. I was like, Good. Oh my God, this is embarrassing.
I hope it did.
I'm drinking water, right?
I saw you drinking your water. I'm very proud of you. Look, these water bottles are not expensive. I hate that this one's not glass, but when I got it from Black Rifle, it was plastic. They're trying to kill me. It's fine. But what I love about it is it's, I love that it has a handle, which gives me no excuse to not attach it to my fanny pack that's with me everywhere. It's got like a carabiner that goes with me everywhere. And it's like, look, what are we mostly made of? And of course we can't function when it's not being replenished. Like, of course we suck and our bodies don't work well without it. I mean, it's like the one thing we need. It's like you can go days and days and days and days and days and days and days with no food, but you cannot go a certain amount of time without water, Missy.
Yeah.
Don't make me come up there and beat your ass with water.
I was on the verge of like passing out too. I don't think I've ever drank enough water. My gym here, I go to CrossFit and we're doing a challenge.
You're a fitness person too.
The goal is to drink 128 a gallon, 128 ounces of water a day. And I've been doing that now for all of January. So you caught me in rare form. I'm very well hydrated.
Okay.
You've changed my life for that and that alone. I'm like, anytime I'm thirsty, I'm like, oh, she'd call me out. I need to go take a sip of water.
Hey, if I have done one thing right, and it is to have influenced anybody to just drink some more water, because y'all are so goddamn thirsty out there in every single way. It just, if that's what I've done for you, and that's what this show was meant to do, then I'm living my dream. Look, you talk about this. You talk about this at the beginning, and it's like, what are you doing and what do you think of when you go to bed? It's like, I love this. I love to talk to people and learn your stories and give you the space to tell us why it's so important that you do what you do, because there are 8 billion people on the planet and not everybody is going to get an opportunity to talk about their life or for anybody outside their town to know who they are. But every person's story is important and every person's background matters. And every person that is affecting the world in a positive manner who has gone through anything deserves an opportunity to talk. And I think, like you said, it matters what you do. You aren't what you do, but it matters what you do. And if it makes you feel good and those around you feel good and it helps one person, then it's worth all of the being alone, writing the notes, building the product, sitting in silence and solitude. You can see these moments and these things that are gifted to you by the world, and they can happen to you or they can happen for you. And that is completely mindset dependent. And that is the same with water. It can exist for you or that bitch will drown you. You choose how you want water to be in your life. But I'm telling you, it's only going to get better the more you put into your body, my dear.
Well, I've benefited from it. And what you do too. I mean, I don't talk about myself a lot. I don't put a lot of stuff out there about my personal life or any of that. And what you do is so important. And I have to take a moment to say all the guests that you have on and the way that you just go about it and what you're bringing to the world, with your conversations is really important. And I am here for it and I'm honored to be on your show.
Well, thank you. It's, you're welcome back anytime. I'd like to kind of have you on, you know, every little bit, tell us what you're doing and how you're expanding, because I can see this is going to expand really rapidly. I just hope that eventually I'll be getting a piece before they're so sold out because you're so fucking famous. And then you're going to be walking down. It's going to be ridiculous. You're going to be like in New York Fashion Week and it's going to be some ridiculous outfit that your dad made out of bones. And then it's going to be all of your jewelry and no one's going to be able to get a piece ever again. That's what's going to happen. That's the dream. Oh, I love it, darling. I just thank you so much for your time and you're welcome. Absolutely anytime you want. But more importantly, and most importantly, how does the rest of the world support you, what you're doing, your passion, your love for life, and truly giving the opportunity to just be there for you the way you are for everyone else in your life, it feels like?
Well, come visit me at Gold Daughters. There every day, all summer long. So that's what we're doing. You know, my Instagram, people can reach me on Alora Longley. My dad's site, if you're interested in what he's doing and what we're doing up there, the Boneyard, Alaska is where it's at. I will have to warn you, it's very scary when your father, who has no filter, becomes an influencer.
No, I love
it. So
I'm here
you are
for
warned.
It.
This is your warning.
So good though.
It's so hilarious.
No, he like, just says oh everything. God. He says everything that we all think, but don't have the platforms to say.
Yeah.
That's it. It's perfect.
I know. He's
You're
a
terrified,
rare
though.
form of a human. Yeah, it's scary. He's sitting there with like 400,000 people now at his thumb tips with his tequila. And I'm like, I'm so scared. What are you
Let
gonna
it
say?
happen. Let it
I
happen.
have
Let
at
him
this
be a
point.
real person. Let him be
I'm
a
like,
real person.
obviously it is working. So dad, you go. You do you.
You do you. That's all right. So they can come and your social media handle. What's that
Yep,
though?
Elora Longley. And then
Okay.
Gold Daughters.
Is that where they can buy all of the jewelry as well? When you do
Jewelry,
your drops?
EloraLongley.com.
There
Yeah.
we go.
So that's it.
Well, we
See,
need to
I do
know where to
podcasts
find
all
the
the
goods.
time.
It's okay. That's what I'm here for. My job is to make sure we get your information out. So I'm like, nope, need more. That's not where you buy the jewelry.
Oh,
I know
and
that.
EloraLongley.com. There's also a YouTube channel, Gold Daughters YouTube channel. We have all of these videos from the Boneyard, and you can kind of see us finding fossils, and it's pretty fun.
So damn cool. God, your life is so cool. Amazing. All right. Well, you stick with me, darling. Everyone
Okay.
else, we'll see y'all next week.
Bye. Thank you.